broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth podcast with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. This is Matt Sorensen. We are coming at you, not live, but from a recorded remote location in Las Vegas, Nevada, Sin City.
I thought you were going to say an undisclosed location, but
it's not fully disclosed, you know, partial disclosure on location.
I didn't tell my family we were in Vegas, so I'm going to have to edit that part out. I'm just joking.
We'll make sure that happens.
Yeah.
And of course, what do two guys do when they get together in Las Vegas? They record a podcast.
Yeah. We are players. you can tell we have no concept of fun when we're like, hey, let's get to the hotel and set up our podcasting equipment.
Oh, did you bring your mic? Oh, me too. Cool.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. Yeah, that's about it. Then we'll go out and get a good steak and then go to bed early. But our wives are happy about that. We're pretty boring. Yeah, man.
Well, it's our firm annual retreat, so that's what we're here for. We do a lot of planning and stuff. It's a great time for us to be together as a team. But we had to make sure we got the podcast out still. So, yeah. And Mark, I think we got a really important topic too.
Yes. Yeah, so the topic du jour is
LLC.
Yeah, I love that. I'll have the soup du jour. It sounds really good. So we got our movie quote in right out of the bat, right off the bat. I can't even get my quotes right. All right. Our topic today, drum roll, is joint venture or LLC, pros and cons. Mm-hmm. And this came to light this week, as it usually does with clients bringing us kind of some crazy partnership agreements and ways of documenting things, trying to get around LLCs and recording and lawyers. And so they do it in a funky way that causes problems, big problems down the road. And right. So we thought we ought to dedicate a show to what is a joint venture, a JV agreement. Why would you use one? And when would you use an LLC instead? And what are all the pitfalls and drawbacks?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. I love it. We'll break that bad boy down and hopefully give you some words of wisdom, so to speak, on when to use which option. But before we get into the, I think that's actually the main dish, the soup du jour, or maybe the the apps.
That's
might
true.
Be
that's
the tax true. And legal tips.
We're doing a 3-course meal. We have a legal tip, a tax tip, and then the main course.
Yeah.
So you can imagine our firm conferences, a lot of this. So it's going to be a pretty dry day for our staff. What we do every, I want you, you know, our listeners, our followers to feel confident in our efforts. We once a year take our team away for a day and a half training and do a little something fun. It's kind of a reward for working hard throughout the year. And so all of our employees will be here tomorrow and we're talking tax and legal. Woo. So, our staff will be fully trained on that, and they're sick of our jokes too. Yeah. So
we're taking them to a real show. We're taking them to Chris Angel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because our dog and pony show, they're on reruns of it, I think, right now. So,
I think it'll be fun. So,
yeah, it'll be good.
So, Matt, okay. So, if you're new to the show, thank you. We will not screw around and just make idle chat the entire time. We want to provide some real content and helpful tips for all of you out there trying to build wealth and protect your assets and live the dream, as one might say. So, Matt, you have our legal tip?
Yes, I do. Now, I gave a legal tip maybe a month ago on beneficiary designations. Just in general, that's a
barn burner.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we all have made beneficiary designations to say when I set up a bank account or I have life insurance, who gets it when I die. But I want to give a really important tip for those with retirement accounts. Okay.
Okay.
This is, any of you have a 401k, you got an IRA, any of those types of retirement accounts.
Yeah, you would think this. Yeah, a lot of people think this doesn't apply to them. They're like, I'm not rich. What's a beneficiary designation? That doesn't matter. Hey, you got a job. When you filled out your employment paperwork, they asked, who is the beneficiary of your retirement account when
yeah.
the starts funding it? That's a beneficiary designation.
Yep. Now, this goes with the tax strategy because here's the, I'm going to, let me lay it out for you.
Okay, hold it. We've got to play our music first.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I was coming in with my drum solo on the guitar guy. I hadn't even gone yet.
Yeah, okay. You're going hot. Let's set it up.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
Okay. All right. I just twirled my drumsticks. Now I'm about ready to play.
Okay.
Okay. Beneficiary designation. So when you set up your retirement account, right, you say, all right, when I die, who gets this account when I die? Because you will die. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news. So who's going to get it when you do? Now, for many of you for tax planning have realized it's an awesome thing to pass my retirement account on to my kids. Even if I'm married, I may not want my spouse to inherit it. I may want my kids to inherit it to stretch it out over time.
And
my
for those, presence. Yeah. And for those that are younger, we want to be all inclusive here. For those that may be older with no children or unmarried or younger with no children, blah, 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 all this, you're still going to put someone, maybe your mom or dad or your brother or sister or a niece or nephew or even a charity. So
yeah,
that this all applies. Okay. So anyway, but you were going to say, Matt, stretch, right?
Yeah, stretch. But I'm going to say for those that are married, when you complete a beneficiary designation and you're married, you have to fill out a spousal waiver. Your spouse has to waive that and say, all right, I agree. This is my spouse's 401k. They have not listed me and I'm okay with not having a claim to it or right to it. I'm okay with it passing down to my kids. So your spouse must waive that in any 401k or defined benefit plan. So there's something called a spousal waiver form that needs to be completed on file.
I didn't know this. No, hold it. See, this is where it's so amazing that I'm partners with this awesome intellectual giant named Matt Sorensen. Okay, so if I want to list my kids as my primary beneficiary in my 401k.
Correct.
Or IRA?
Well, okay, 401k, everybody's got to do it.
Okay, we'll come to IRAs.
If you're married.
Okay.
But if I'm married, IRAs, it depends on state law.
Okay, so if I'm married and I want to benefit my kids, I'm on a rocky road with my spouse, and I want to just say, well, you know what?
You just want to stretch it. You know, you just want to skip your spouse and say, my spouse is going to have assets. I want my kids to get this because I want to stretch it out. They can pull it out over their lifetime. And I'm just going to let it go to them.
Okay. So he or she, you can't just do this. The spouse has to sign off on it. If they don't, it's going to kick back to them anyway.
Right. And your spouse could say, all right, my spouse died. I'm the surviving spouse now. I will sign off on the waiver and therefore my administrator will let those accounts go to my kids and skip me essentially.
Oh.
But whether you do it now or whether your surviving spouse has to go do it after you die, that thing's got to get done on any employer-based account like a 401k, even if those of you that have solo 401ks. Okay, it's called the spousal waiver. Now, IRA people, and I don't mean to get too technical here. I don't write the laws. I just, don't hate the player, hate the game. I'm just, I'm just on the field right now, okay? All right. So IRAs, if you live in a community property state like Arizona, California, I don't know, there's like 9 of them. Your spouse must also sign the waiver. For those that are not in community property states, you don't need to stress about it. It's nice to have done. For those in the community property states, the spousal waiver must be done for your IRA account as well.
Okay. So if I'm in one of these 41 states, let's say New York, that's not a community property state, and I have an IRA, correct, I can screw over my spouse and name the kids as the beneficiary of my IRA, and there's nothing he or she can do about it.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, it's not about screwing over your spouse, because you may want that as part of your planning, right? You may want to skip the spouse anyway as part of planning purposes. If you otherwise have other assets, and your spouse may have a significant enough account as it is possibly, there's a lot of good planning reasons why to skip the spouse anyways.
Boy, you know how to twist it around and stay out of hot water, don't you?
Well, I'm just saying we have lots of clients that do it, and they're not doing it for that.
I mean, I buy it, but did Catherine go for that when you explained it that way? Is that
it's not set up that way? So you know, it's
going okay. There, but, all right.
Yeah.
Okay. I bought into it. I'm cool. Okay. You sold me.
Well, right. We just run into this in our indirected IRA, of course. So I just want to kind of give a tip to that. I did a blog article on beneficiary designations in general for those just that are like, what the heck is this? But I wanted to do, you know, I wanted to drill down even more on the retirement accounts because there's a quirk to it and that's it.
You know, and this is why, again, doing your estate planning is critical and doing a review every 5 or 10 years and talking about these things with your lawyer that understands taxes and financial matters. You don't, I know a lot of older folks have had that family attorney in, you know, in association with a family attorney for years, you know, everybody thinks they can do everything, but they can't. You know, your family attorney may specialize in one area, and this is one thing where you need a lawyer that understands some tax principles. Mm-hmm. You know, Arthur Fonzarelli isn't going to be the family lawyer for everything. If you're the Bluth family, it might work. But what was his name in the rest of the
development? Oh, what is his name?
You got to Google it.
That's hilarious, though.
Okay. Well, I'm giving my tax tip. You look it up for those that are not Arrested Development.
I'll come back, yeah.
Okay. All right. So I've got a good tax tip. It has to deal with drones, GoPros, and your camera.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Okay, so here's my tax tip. Folks, let's combine good business planning with tax planning. Business planning would mean that I've got to have a good web page. I probably should have a little social media. Even if you're not a big Instagrammer or Snapchatter, you should probably have a LinkedIn account, maybe a Facebook account, maybe a Twitter account. And it can be very professional, but people are going to throw you out. When you're out there selling your business and yourself, the first thing people are going to do is going to look for your website and look for you on social media. And you want to have a nice portrayal of your business and your persona. That's a key part of doing good business. We can't ignore that anymore. 15 years ago, you could say, I'm not getting on the social media wagon, or, well, I don't even have a website. I don't need one. Well, you do now. I mean, it really is. It's almost as more important than having a business card. I mean, when I was growing up, you had to have a business card. Well, now, sometimes I don't even carry around a business card. I just go to my website, you know, and that's what people do and say. So here's the business principle. You need a good website and at least a mediocre presence in the social media outlets. And when I say mediocre, you don't have to do them all, but at least choose a couple. Now, how are you going to populate and spruce up that website? You're going to need video. You're going to want some good photography, and you might even want some good drone footage to spruce it up. And some of you say, well, my business is rental property. Well, wouldn't it be nice to get a shot of a drone over your rental property? Do you know we did, you know, Matt, I've got a good story for this. I just thought of this. Our commercial property that Matt and I have in Cedar City, Utah is where our law firm primary corporate office is located. And we thought it was wise. We've talked about it on the show before. If you have a business, if you can buy the building that you're in rather than pay rent to someone else, pay it to yourself. So that's why you see many restaurant owners own the building, dentists, doctors, engineers, contractors, realtors, they own their own building. Just makes sense. Well, I got a drone and we were messing around with it and playing around at the office. And if you remember this, Matt, we said, well, we need a good video footage of our office for our website. And I took the drone up and went around our office. And this is one of the reasons I took a tax deduction for my drone and why I want all of you to take a tax deduction for your drone is to fly around your property or your real estate or your business and get some good footage for your social media and website. Well, when we got up there and then we uploaded the video to our laptop and started looking at it, we noticed the roof, there was like 10 or 20 shingles that were jacked up on a corner of the roof. We had no idea. And if you remember that, Matt, we sent that video over to our property manager that handles the HOA for the building, because we don't own the whole building. It's condominiumized. And we said, hey, look at our roof. here, we got a problem. Yeah. And he was like, oh, all right, I better fix that. And so, you know, it was interesting. And you never know when you might have to make an insurance claim. So anyway, I'm not trying to be unethical or too creative to the point you get in trouble. Again, if you own real estate or a business, you need a good website, you need a good social media presence, you should more definitely have a camera, probably a video camera, which I think a GoPro does a lot of good for that. And finally, maybe even a drone to take some footage for insurance purposes or business promotion. So anyway, those can be excellent write-offs, maybe 100% write-off. And if you use it a lot for personal, maybe we write it off 80% business, 20% personal. But
yeah,
take care of those things. So there's your tax tip kind of coupled with a good business asset protection, insurance, and promotion benefit.
Yeah.
Love it. And then, Matt, and let me just throw out travel. When you travel and you go look at your rental properties, take your camera and take pictures and notify the tenant that you're going to walk through at least 24 to 48 hours before you get there. And you're going to walk through and take pictures and tell them it's for insurance purposes. You know, you're going to be inspecting the property and it is for insurance purposes, but it's a good property management thing to do. Fly a drone around to the property, make sure that you've, you know, because if there's a natural disaster of any sort, you know how good that footage is going to help you? So many people try to make a claim for insurance and have no camera or video footage of their property at all. And they're just, it's a crapshoot with the insurance company.
Yeah. So like having a camera and, you know, using this equipment, which I know you get to use in other areas of your life. But, you know, I had a client, landlord, had a property in College Town, rented out to a bunch of college kids who each kind of had a room. And they left the place trashed, 10,000 plus in damages. And the client's like, hey, I'm taking them to court. And he does. He takes him to court, kind of represents himself, and he's got his pictures of how it was trashed. The college kids are like, yeah, that's what it looks like. And that's what it looked like when we moved in. The place was a dump. And the judge is like, well, do you have any evidence of what it looked like before? Nope. And so taking that little inventory on the front end, just, you know, using that camera, when you're there, most landlords or their property managers are going to go check on it in between. Just get a good record of it in between so you can, you know, you have that exhibit A in defense.
Case
Barry Zuckerkorn. If your lawyer is Barry Zuckerkorn, he's not thinking of this for you. You got to do it for him.
Barry Zuckerkorn.
Oh my gosh.
Arrested Development lawyer, Henry Winkler.
Yeah. If any of you are Arrested Development fans, oh my gosh, when Henry Winkler comes in, AKA Fonzarelli, is their attorney. Oh my gosh. So funny.
It's hilarious.
Yep. First two seasons. In the just classic.
Yeah.
It kind of went downhill with their revival, but that's okay.
I'm still good though. Still good. Though. For them.
Okay. Right. Well, that brings us to our topic at hand. Should I maybe start it with a little example too, Matt, since you were so wise with that little college story?
Volley back to you.
Okay. So I had this call with a client this week who's a wonderful client. She's great. And she listens to our podcast, so I don't, she'll probably know I'm talking about her. I'm not going to get too specific. And I have, of course, we talk to clients all over the country, but she gave me a call and she's like, hey, I'm trying to document a couple of deals. And she's doing several fix and flips and she's a professional, very skilled, but she's in California. In California, doing business is just darn expensive. And so she's got private money lenders. She's got joint venture partners. And so what you start to do in California is you get a little cavalier. You get a little lazy. And I don't want to say it's lazy.
You don't want to set up an entity. Let's say why, right? Because every company you set up is $800 per year to the state of California. So
minimum.
Yeah, minimum. And so that's a big annual expense, whereas other states like Arizona are zero. But so that's a roadblock that people start engineering around.
Yeah. So that's the first issue. Sorry. And I shouldn't assume everybody knows that's listening. You might live in a state like Arizona where the filing fee is dirt cheap and there's no annual fee to keep that LLC going. You've just got to do some filing every couple of years. So, I mean, it is really expensive to have an entity in California. And number two, you get into problems with, let me tell you the second problem. And this is why JVs and partially deeding property starts to happen is you have private money lenders And first, private money lenders love to get a piece of the action on the back end. Not only do they want points and interest, they're like, well, and if you make money, I want 10% of the profit. And someone that's desperate will take that. And they'll put together what they call a participating note where, yeah, you're loaning me money and you're getting points, interest, and a piece of the profit. Well, guys, participating note means partnership agreement, which means general partner, which means we're now liable for each other's actions on this project. Very, very dangerous in court. And then the third issue that starts to happen is if you're doing a lot of fix and flips, sometimes you have to raise a few $100,000 for all the rehab. And this is in states like Illinois and California and big city remodels and multi-unit remodels. So you might need lenders, 10 lenders rather than just one, or five rather than two or something. And so you start splitting up a trust deed and you get your, it's clunky and you're like, well, I'll just put them on title. And so we've seen it all. So I had one of those phone calls this week where she
made it sound like a mess. I'm, you know, I get it. Okay. It sounds messy.
But you can see why someone would get sucked into that is because they're just trying to save a few dollars and take care of their investors. Keyword, not good, investors. We'd like to call them partners or lenders, because once you call them investors, there's a whole bag of problems. And so let me say this in summary, Matt, and then I know you'll take it from here. It's just that I got on the phone call with her and she had a little bit of everything. She had people that were in a joint venture agreement, no LLC, which made them jointly and vicariously liable for everybody's actions. There was no LLC. Then she had an LLC with some people. Then she was putting people on title to keep them happy when all they were was a lender. And then she had lenders that had notes recorded, and then multiple lenders with a partial first trust deed. It was just everywhere. Uh-huh. And so in a situation like that, and here's the summary point. If everybody makes money and everybody's happy, it's no big deal. But you get one person that turns sideways and they feel like they got not what they were promised, or they're pissed off at something that happened, the whole thing blows up and it gets bad. So that's what we wanted to talk about today, is when do we use these type, what type of agreement should we use? And that's kind of the introduction, Matt, of why I think we got here. But what are your
thoughts? And I would just say, I think I want to drill down into specifics on when to use what type of structure, but the joint venture is a common alternative to the LLC. So when we say joint venture or joint venture agreement, and Mark threw out a lot of other varieties of things you can do from that client example, but let me just say the joint venture. That is basically a contract. It could be 2 to 3 pages. We have a good little template that's maybe 3-4 pages, I want to say. It's just a joint venture agreement.
And we use these.
Yeah. They can be great. We'll give a couple points on what to include in them. But they're good if you're like, hey, let's partner in on some real estate project or some little side venture. We just want to do one thing together. We're not going into business together. You know, we're not doing everything together. We're just going to do this one thing, this one deal, maybe this one little, you know, business arrangement to just get started. And a joint venture agreement can be a good solution instead of doing nothing, right? We want to document it and have a contract. You're sharing profits. And that's essentially what the joint venture is. It's kind of like the watered down LLC. There's no liability protection in the joint venture that you get in an LLC, but it's a good way. You at least have some contractual agreement on how you're sharing profits and who does what.
Yeah. And we're okay with that bare minimum, because a lot of times people come into the office or over the phone across the country with a napkin at Denny's. I am not kidding. I have had the beginnings of a lawsuit on a napkin from Denny's. And so the JV agreement is a bare minimum document, and we're okay with it when it's two entities. See, I don't want two people doing a JV. I want two entities. So at least there's a veil of protection somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So if you have your own corporation or LLC, depending on what you're doing, you know, you're using different ones. We have podcasts on that, but that would be the party in the joint venture for you. It's not you personally, it's your company. And then presumably the other party has their own entity, or they could be in there personally, but you know, that would be a bad decision on their part. So we want to make sure that's tip one. I think if you're using a joint venture agreement, make sure you're using your entity, because you still need liability protection on whatever you're doing. And I want to say a lot of people use these on fix and flip deals. Talk about liabilities. Frankly, that's very heavy liability area. So you want to make sure you're using an entity to protect you.
Let's give another tip. Can I give another one on the joint venture?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I think there's really three. How am I say?
I've got a couple too. Don't steal one of mine.
Okay. I want to talk about terms. Like, what do you write into the joint venture agreement? Okay. Everybody like writes in, how are we going to share the money, right? How are we going to split profits? Okay. Let's say who's doing what. What's their responsibility to get their share of the profits? Maybe one person's the money, one person's the work. We'll say what it is. And then also say, who's got the authority to act? Like, how are we deciding on things? Is the work partner got certain ability to just make decisions? Do we have to both agree on key things? Like, just lay that out. It doesn't have to be paragraph after paragraph. And, you know, just lay out at least one or two paragraphs on how you're going to make decisions and who has responsibility to do what.
Yeah. And a few other terms. Delineate who's going to hold title to the property, because a JV agreement is not an entity. So who's going to hold title? And usually whoever holds title is going to get the HUD settlement statement 1099 from the buyer. So you're going to walk away with this money, and then you're going to 1099 the other joint venture partner. See, someone's got to claim the entire sale on their tax return, and then the other partner is going to get a 1099 for their share of the profit based on the JV. So you want to talk about title, taxes, and I'm going to say, Matt, worst case scenario, right? What happens if we have to put more money in? What happens if we lose money?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. And that's a big disagreement area. I'll just say people do it different ways. And on bringing money, like a lot of times the work partner in the deal is going to say, well, that's the cash partner's responsibility. We need 10 more grand. You know, cash partner, you're the one that puts in cash, right? So just throw in 10 more grand. Well, the cash partner is probably sitting there thinking, well, you're the work partner. You budgeted this and you spent more money than we needed. So you should put in the rest, right? And so, but it's nice if you put it in there. And a lot of times you say we split it. If we need more money than we thought, we're going to each put it in an equal percent or whatever our, you know, percent of profit is in the deal. We'll have and that's kind of the default, like in our LLC operating agreements, by the way, is that type of arrangement. So, but you can agree to that, and that should be a thing to include in the JV.
And what I like about a JV agreement, it's a great time to really understand where your partner's coming from. Because when you start to talk about worst case scenario, what if we have to put more money in? Who does what? When do we sell the property? Or how the business is going to go down or the project? All of a sudden, your partner's like, well, hold it. I didn't sign up for that. And you're like, well, hold it. Then who's holding the bag here? I mean, you know, and all of a sudden you start to find out, well, we're not on the same page here, because you need to be able to have a practical conversation about the worst case scenario. And if your partner's not willing to, just walk away, just be done with it. This is a great time to get kind of that rip, 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 you know, red alert, you know, hit the button, escape hatch, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, this is like, you know, going on a date before you, like, you know, go to a weekend together, right? This is like, let's, you know.
This is coffee, you know. This is, coffee. See if this date's really going to work. And really, you know, we could play with that example. This is like meeting for a drink is talking about the JV agreement. Then going on the date is actually executing the project according to the joint venture agreement. And then if things go really well and you're going to go steady or get engaged, that's where the LLC comes. And so that, I really think the JV is a stepping stone to an LLC. Either you're going to do this one-off project, be done, or else you're going to say, you know what? That was a good experience together. Now let's get a freaking LLC, get away from the JV. It was a mess, but at least we had an agreement.
Yeah. I like that. It all comes down to dating.
It does. It always does. Now, one other thing too. Let me throw this. Now, when do you not use a JV? I think you have to be careful when you, and I loved how Matt, my amazing partner, used the P word, partner, during every one of his examples there. We want to stay away from the I word, investor. I have so many people go, I'm looking for an investor. I'm looking for an investor. Oh, you mean you're looking for a lawsuit? Is that what you're doing? Oh, I'm looking for handcuffs because I want to go to jail.
Yeah. Is the SEC listening? Please, please. Can you come, you know, ask me a bunch of questions about what I'm doing?
Yeah. Do not make promises to people. Do not guarantee them a result. You're going to say, let's go into partnership together.
Right.
You don't use a JV agreement if it's a lender. If they're going to lend you money, you're a whole different agreement. You're talking promissory note. You can't say I want a joint venture and a promissory note. It's one or the other. If you're going to do both, then they're a partner. You can't be a lender and a partner. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a, yeah.
Yeah. It's messy. Now, if you want money partners and let me say this, a silent partner equates to an investor. So if you're going to say, well, I want three partners that are putting in money, but they don't get to say, there's no votes, we're not having regular meetings, they're just going to put in their money. Well, you lose it, it's going to be ugly. It's going to be possible jail time, literally. So you want to say, do you want to partner with me? We're going to have a monthly meeting. We're going to make decisions together on when to buy, when to sell, when to expand, when not to expand. This is a partnership. Well, I don't want a partnership. I just want to put in my money. Go find a PPM then, a private placement. Go find a fund. Go join some sort of REIT. But with me, we're partners. You're not, this is not put my money in and hope it works out. And then if you're pissed, you're going to sue me. No. We're partners and we're going to make decisions together.
Yeah. And that's a key term in the JV agreement is that the cash partner and work partner, and they could be cash partners, maybe a couple, they have voting rights. And you guys have to agree on certain things for major decision-making. And that's what makes them an actual partner is they have voting rights and they get a say. Are we going to sell the property for a loss? Or are we going to sell it for a smaller profit than we thought? Are we going to put more money in? You know, there's certain things that you're going to vote on. Now, if you're the work partner, you can have kind of day-to-day smaller decision-making authority so you don't got to check on everything. But that's another important part to the JV agreement. So, well, let's talk about, so you said when to use the LLC though, instead of the JV agreement. And that is when you're going steady. Mm-hmm. But I'll also say, if it's an ongoing thing, it's like, hey, we're starting a new business together. This is, you know, we're committing to this and we're partners. This isn't just, we're doing this for 3 months and see how it goes. You know, this isn't just a small project that ends in a short period of time. So, and that's why we kept giving the flip. The flip is the common, you know, deal that's maybe 6 months or whatever, and you guys are in it and you go back out and everybody gets their money back or, you know, or their shit cut of the profit and then you decide to leave.
Yeah. Right. We went on, we had a fling. We're not going to go steady. I think another, and this analogy is going to get really out of control here, but I think if you have more than one partner, you should go the LLC route. So if you're going to go a three-way, you really need to just do an LLC. Okay. I didn't bring up that example to be crude. But I mean, seriously, if you're going to bring in a third party, just do an LLC. Don't try to make a joint venture agreement more than it is. And it's just, three's a crowd, you know, boy.
Okay.
I'm going to stop talking.
I'm not going to, I'm just be careful on what I say for the next 30 seconds. Okay.
Cut.
I like that. Okay. Now I'll say this.
And I'll say that. Have you ever seen a joint venture agreement with more than two people? It's rare. It really is.
Yeah. Sometimes. I want to say definitely more than a few. Yeah. It's less than five, and even LLCs, we don't want to see too many, but it's mostly two people.
And Matt, let me throw you a softball here or a curveball as you may see it. Let's talk about IRAs. Let's say the IRA is going to be one of the partners. A JV agreement, not a lot of trust companies like that.
Nope. You're not going to be able to do a joint venture agreement out of an IRA directly. Now you can do a note and we've done some notes and you can see those that have kind of a participation clause in it. Like you mentioned earlier, Mark, that we like to just label as additional interest. And for those drafting those types of notes, there's better ways to do them than not. But almost every IRA custodian is going to reject a JV agreement. It's possible it could be done right, but I'm telling you, a JV agreement for an IRA as a member is going to have to look like an operating agreement for an LLC, and it's going to have that many provisions in it for an IRA to be able to be okay as a member. If you're doing that, why aren't you just doing an LLC then?
Yeah. And I think, now let's bring another facet into this, which was part of my introduction. Let's talk about private money lenders in this note that Matt just said. Mm. Now, you could have a variation of all this. Let's say Matt and I are going to joint venture on a flip. He's going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to put in X number of dollars. He's going to put in Y number of dollars. And it's pretty clear. Okay, cool. We start the flip. Oh, we need money. Now, we've already decided in the joint venture which entity is going to hold title and close on the property and 1099 the other person. Well, if we're going to bring in a private money lender, they would typically be a first or second trust deed. And they're going to get a promissory note, and they're going to get what's called a trust deed lien against the property in a first, second, or third position. Now, that's okay. That makes sense. They get points. They get interest. And Matt and I said, we need an extra 50 grand. So we go over across the street to John Doe or Mary Jane, and they say, yep, I'll put in the money. I'm in. They look at the value of the property, and they think a second trust deed is okay for them. But if you're going to get two or three lenders to throw in $50,000 each and try to split up this trust deed, you now ran afoul of the SEC.
Yeah. Yes. And this is where you definitely need to get some consulting because there are states that have exemptions on secured property. So if I am raising money, let's say I'm the person raising the money, and this is the person that gets in trouble, by the way, if all the crap hits the fan, so to speak, and you lose money, all the people that loaned you money under these trust deeds could end up talking to the SEC or state securities divisions. And so you're the one that's got problems. So it's important for you raising the money to do this right. Now, I was just going to say, it is state by state. Some states say, if you're raising money by notes and you're securing people in first position, and this could be multiple people on one note, as long as they're fully secured, it's exempt from securities laws. Some states allow it to be second position as long as it's still fully secured, but there's some variations in the states on that. So so you got to be careful. And I say on those trustee notes, we don't usually see more than five. I'm not, you know, any of the professionals out there doing those, it's rare to see more than that of, you know, people who are multiple lenders on one trust deed or deed of trust.
Yeah. And here's another little, and let me clarify this too. SEC stands for the Securities and Exchange Commission, not the Southeastern Football Conference that many of you hate as I do, because the world does not revolve around the BCS and the SEC. As some of you listeners may think it does, there's this little conference.
They got some great teams, though. Just give them some, you know, let's be honest.
I know they've got some great teams. But if I got all that money, too, for my stadium and could recruit, you know.
It's true. They got an unfair advantage. True.
And they do. Okay, we won't even go there. We just alienated 10 listeners. They just dropped off. Our Alabama fans, they're freaking out right now. Okay, but the SEC means Securities and Exchange Commission. And here's how this plays out. You have two or three lenders, or investors, as you've called them inappropriately, and all of a sudden, your flip goes south. It costs more, you discover that the foundation's cracked, the market dips, some problem occurs, and all of a sudden, you went from making 100 grand to losing 50. What are all of your lenders and investors gonna do? They're gonna be knocking on your door. And if one of them does not have faith in you or isn't willing to walk away and lick their wounds, they're gonna go talk to a lawyer. And if they get a lawyer that knows what they're doing or is unscrupulous and they say, well, what'd you sign when you put in your money? And you go, well, I signed this note and they put this trust deed thing and blah, 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 and they made all these promises. If that attorney really frankly knows what they're doing, they're going to throw the book. I mean, they're going to send you the most threatening, scary letter, threatening a lawsuit and reporting you to the state and the feds. And these are the same people that investigated Bernie Madoff. So they're going to knock on your door and go, hey, how many of these other deals you got, you bozo? What are you doing? And they start tearing through your life and looking at all your deals. It gets ugly. And so that's why you really don't want to be cooking the books in some real estate club meeting, talking all these creative ways to get around LLCs and doing it right and talking to a lawyer. It's a cost of doing business. And I'm not trying to be self-serving here. I'm really trying to just help you stay out of harm's way. Don't use us if you don't want to, but find someone to bless these deals and talk you through them so that you stay out of harm's way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man. I feel like I'm beating people up. I feel bad.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just got to go preach, you know? You just got to, the people don't want to hear it, but sometimes you just feel like you got to say, you got something to say.
You got
to. Well, and I'll say this too, is this is one of those things as you look as a business owner, and a lot of people are using these joint venture agreements or notes and such as a way to creatively start their business and fund it. And we love that. We're all about that.
Yes.
But as you start growing and as you start making money, and hopefully you do, this is a big risk factor in your business. You do not want these skeletons down the, you know, if you've got 20 of these deals out there that, you know, maybe two or three of them didn't go so hot and you got some crappy set of documents and structure that you're not, you know, sleeping well at night because you're stressing about them. And so we just kind of want to set you off in the right course and right direction so that you got the right structure and foundation so you can feel good and confident about how you're operating.
Yeah. Okay. Now, and on that note, and I want to give another example that I ran into this week. I just forgot about, and it's sitting in my email to deal with, but let's talk about the way to do it. So let's say you're new to real estate or you've learned enough to find a good deal, and that's great. And you're doing your research and your studies and you're ready to put your first deal together. This is not the time to maybe pull out the JV agreement from underneath the desk and try to go for it on your first deal. The more seasoned investors that have a quality operating entity and they've been around the block a few times, those are the people using JV agreements properly. You don't usually want to use a JV agreement for your first deal. So what I would say is budget $500 to $1,000, get an hour with an attorney you trust, try us out if you haven't already, and say, hey, one of you guys, gals, you know, we've got Christy on the team now. We're finally making sure we're a little more well-rounded and we need it. It's all this testosterone on here. It's a disaster. But get one of us on the phone and say, here's what I need. I need an LLC with an operating agreement. And like Matt said, you want to define who's doing what, who's putting in what money, what's the worst case, what's the best case. And you take it out and you start talking to some of the partners, which could include IRAs and 401ks and retirement accounts. And you're going to say to people, hey, look at this deal I'm doing. And it may seem a little slow at first, and you might miss out on that deal. But let me tell you this, you're going to build relationships with people. And you're going to say, you know what, that we missed that deal, but it's okay. Next deal that comes around, are you interested? Yeah. And I've still got my quality LLC. And they're going to see you as a more legitimate real estate investor because you're coming to them in a legitimate way. And then you can say, okay, I got a deal. We've got our LLC. We've got our partners. And by the way, we're going to use some private money. And the money lenders are going to say, I want a first trust deed. I want a second trust deed. Are you using a mortgage to get the property? And then we'll be in second position. And you're going to say, sure, why don't we do an appraisal? Let's make sure that it's a properly recorded trust deed. And once it's recorded, you inject the money through escrow at the same moment. There's none of these promises and emails and urgency and cutting corners. And by the way, people, when you do it right the first time, maybe you make a little less profit. Maybe it costs $2,000 or $3,000 to do it right. But you're going to sleep better at night. I promise you, it'll be a lot smoother deal in the long run. Mm-hmm. Anything to add on doing it properly that I missed there? Like what you'd tell people on structuring it properly?
Yeah, I think that's a great point on getting your own entity in place. Like, think of yourself first and how you're going to operate and get your own entity in place. And then think about the other people, how you may bring them in. Because people come in a variety of ways. They could be a lender on a deal to you. They could be the JV partner on the deal to you. You could set up a new entity that your LLC partners into a new LLC for a specific property. And you may be using an S-Corp instead of an LLC. There's, you know, we've got a whole podcast on what entity to use, but that's a very, very important tip. So
I think one last thing I'd say too is just be patient and don't rush to the first deal you see. Take your time. And I think, again, your partners and money people, for lack of a better word, whether they're partners or lenders, they're going to sense that integrity. You want to have a good feeling in your gut and in your mind when these deals come together. And if you feel like you're cutting too many corners, pull out. And I think this is where another example happened this week. I've got two guys in a part of the country, that's all I'm going to say, that started a deal together on a handshake. And I asked both of them, what did you have in writing? Nothing. Just some emails. And then they took some money from some people. They bought a property. And it's all handshake promises and emails. Not even a JV agreement. And guess what? They're not making as much money as they thought. It's cost more. The money lenders want their money from one of the guys that loaned to him rather than a first trust. I mean, it has got every little problem that I talked about. It's funny, I didn't start with this example to begin with. And I'm trying to mediate it. They're both sending nasty emails to each other, CC and me. I said, quit emailing each other. Let me look at this and let's decide what type of relationship we have here. And I'm trying to mediate, and they're willing to give it a try. Because if they both go lawyer up, they're going to be out 10 or 20 grand easy in a lawsuit. And they want to avoid that, but they're mad. And they're mad because they freaking both admitted they should have done it right with a document right out of the gate. And they wouldn't be in this mess. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'm on a high horse here today. Let's go hit the tables, man. It's got to.
Yeah. I mean, Mark and I have learned some lessons ourselves. Let's be honest. And I'll say, I don't want to say we're jaded, but as lawyers, sometimes we do. It's funny. I think it's in many ways, we get the calls of clients who have the deals that have gone bad or not as well as expected, as Mark mentioned there. And those ones we're trying from a legal standpoint to look at the issues. And really, frankly, the most important thing it boils down to is what was in writing. Do you actually have an LLC operating agreement? Do you have a joint venture agreement? Do you have a note? Was the deed of trust recorded? It just comes down to the paperwork. I don't care what you said or what you emailed or anything else. What did you sign? What does the paperwork say?
Help me and help you.
Yeah,
help me. Exactly. Help you.
But we get those calls, which makes us a little jaded. And then I jump to the next client consult that's made so much dang money. They're trying to stuff as much money as they can in a retirement account, or they want to do their next deal on their Roth IRA so they don't pay any taxes. And there's just kind of like this swing of like, you know, for people that need help, you know? So, yeah. But we appreciate helping, of course, both groups of people. So, well, we will be back next week, of course, with another amazing episode of the Refresh Your Wealth podcast. And thanks so much for listening. Make sure you get to refreshyourwealth.com. If you haven't already, sign up for the newsletter. We do that weekly. One just went out recently. Oh. Yes.
Yeah. And Matt, may I make one other quick plug? Two things.
Yeah.
First, August 10th in Hawaii, for any of our listeners in Hawaii, we're doing our final summit. We're doing two locations this year, one on the mainland in Chicago, which was recorded. That should be available any day now for purchase. Yep. And
next week,
And then, but August 10th on the North Shore of Hawaii, it's close to selling out. We can only have 60 people in the room, a little luau at lunch, couple hundred bucks. And it's all about self-directing your IRAs and 401ks and retirement accounts. Going to be fun. Then I've got my five build your business workshops. This is building your business. It's all about my new workbook and how to grow your business, saving money, getting your strategic plan, marketing plan, saving taxes this year, structuring and privacy, just kind of a little combination of 6 hours. And the early bird special is still $150. And I'm doing Philadelphia, Chicago, Seattle, Orange County, and Honolulu as well. And so get over to the website, markjkohler.com or kkoslawyers.com. You can sign up for both workshops there or at sdirasummit.com. Any of these are websites will take you to the right location to sign up. But you can't even go to an internet conference in Vegas for less than $500. And a lot of them are just blowhards, rah, rah, rah. I mean, this is real content that we want to make sure you walk away with workbooks, a continuing education certificate for any professionals out there. And you have a good time, and lunch is included. And that's just unheard. You can't even get CE as a doctor or a dentist or a lawyer or an accountant for a whole day with lunch for $200. You can't. And so we really try to make it affordable. And there's no more than 100 people in any of the rooms, so it's not out of control, and you get your questions answered. So sorry, shameless plug. Get over there, people, and sign up. And Matt, you take us out now. See you next week. What do you want to say? Love you.
Yeah, I say last, I mean, it's kind of a send out and a plug. If you love the show, give us a 5-star review.
Woo!
We love you too. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's eBooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.